I'm at JavaZone in Oslo, Norway, speaking with Holly Cummings from IBM. Holly, can you introduce yourself to the TSS readership?
Sure. I work in the Java Technology Center in the Hursley site, and that's where we do quite a lot of the work on our Java Virtual Machine, and it's also where we're increasingly doing a lot of work on tooling for the Java Virtual Machine. And I've been in that department for about 3 years, and I do garbage collection research and performance research and also increasingly tooling development.
There really hasn't been a lot of tools available to the general Java population for dealing with the Java Virtual Machine, or the IBM version. Is that changing now?
It is, yes. We're bringing out quite a few new tools, and we're increasing the size of our tooling team. I think, in fact, there have been quite a lot of tools available in the past for IBM Java Virtual Machines. It's just not always been obvious where to find them, because sometimes we've had multiple tools doing quite similar things.
So how are they addressing this now? How are you letting people know where these things are?
Well, we've got a new one-stop shop for support, which is called the IBM Support Assistant. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that instead of having to go to multiple sources and try and work out what tooling you need, you download the IBM Support Assistant, and it's a single download. And then you tell it what products you've got by installing the product plugins. And then it then gives you a list of tools which might be applicable in your situation, and it also gives you all the relevant documentation, so you don't have to try and search on the web for the documentation. The documentation just comes right up.
Hmm. So with this service, then, I can just, if I download just a core JDK install, then and just say I have the core JDK installed, it's like, what kind of tools will that provide?
It'll give you a few. The one I'm the lead developer for is EVTK, and so that's a verbose GC analysis tool.
Mm-hmm.
And it will do the visualization of the verbose GC, obviously, but it will also do an increasing amount of analysis around it. So it will give you tuning recommendations, and it will say, you should maybe consider increasing your heap size, or it looks like, you know, this isn't quite right in your system, or one of the problems that people have often is that they inherit code, and it's calling system GC a lot, and it's just destroying the performance. And so it will look for that kind of situation, and that's what our support people see often, is they get called in because the performance is terrible, and then they look at the code and they realize it's calling system GC, but it can be quite time consuming to discover that. So the idea is that EVTK will instead just, on the first pass of the verbose GC log, flag it up and say, hey, this might be a problem that you should investigate.
In terms of the garbage collection models, memory models within the IBM Virtual Machine, you know, up until 1.4, they're quite divergent from the Sun generational model and mm-hmm. the JRocket generational model. Can you describe to us what's changed, and maybe some of the reasons behind those changes?
Sure. As of 1.5, we've got four policies, depending how you count it. We've got a standard mark sweep concurrent. We've got a standard mark sweep not concurrent. And we do find in most situations that does give the best throughput. Actually, it gives a better throughput than a generational policy, mm-hmm. Which is why it's the default. But in 1.5, we did introduce a generational model. And so it's just got two generations, because we found when we did our performance tuning that you got the greatest benefit from generations by having just two, and some of the downsides of the generational policy you avoided by having just two generations. And so you've got, in the younger generation, you've got a copying collector, which is extremely fast and gives you very fast allocation and very fast application access. And then in the older generation, it's a concurrent collector. And so we find with our Gen Con policy, the pause times tend to be quite short, because in the nursery is pretty small and can collect pretty quickly. And then if you do a full collection, it's still a pretty quick collection because it's concurrent, and so it's running in the background for most of the duration of the collection.
Right, so you're talking now about a two-generational space now, right? So,
yeah.
So so the first generation you're calling like a nursery.
Yeah, we call it the nursery.
And the older generation you're calling
the tenured area.
Yeah. So how long do objects actually stay in the nursery before that they will be moved to the tenured area?
It's configurable. I think the default is 14 collections.
Mm-hmm. And so do you...
Although the JVM will do a bit of tuning of that as well, and so if the nursery is quite small, then there may be a bit more pressure on the nursery, and so objects may get promoted earlier. And again, if you've got quite a large nursery, then it's going to try and avoid promoting objects if there's space for them in the nursery.
This makes a slightly different scenario than the standard sun model, where you have a young generation with Eden, which is equivalent to the nursery, and the survivor spaces, which is sort of a hemispheric type arrangement. And this has led to some strategies in the sun environment. Do you find that these strategies of, you know, making the young generations large and resizing the survivor spaces is somewhat translating over to the IBM, or what's the consequence of copying and compaction in the nursery opposed to moving?
Yeah, it's a really interesting problem. It depends so much on the application that it makes it so hard to make general statements, which is quite sad. And I think if there was one answer for a tuning strategy, then we'd have it in the JVM, and nobody would ever have to worry about it again. But depending on the application, again, sometimes depending on the application, either the standard mark sweep will go faster or the generation will go faster. So it's about 50-50 which goes faster. And then within the generational policy, if we take one application and we do an experiment and we change the size of the nursery, so we start with a really small nursery and we go to, you know, a huge nursery, which is most of the heap, then sometimes you'll find there's a performance dip at about a mid-sized nursery. So with a really small nursery, you're doing really well, and with a really large nursery, you're doing really well for different reasons. With a small nursery, you get extremely rapid collections, but then you tend to end up with a lot of objects in the old area having links to the nursery area, and so that can slow things down. And if you've got quite a large nursery area, then you get a different problem, and so the cost of the right barrier is less, but then you end up with quite slow collections in the nursery, but then you end up with a very large, very fast allocation, infrequent collections, and so for one policy, the middle-sized nursery is terrible. Small nurseries are great, and big nurseries are great. But then, with another application, you'll find that the middle-sized nursery is great, and if you go really small, your performance drops off, and if you go really large, your performance drops off. So it's easy to articulate the factors which affect the performance, but which ones are going to be most relevant for your application depends on how rapidly it allocates objects, how long they survive, and the patterns of object connections as well.
So do you find that if an application is holding on to objects for a longer period of time on average than another application, for sure, would that going to a smaller tenured space would work better, or going to a bigger tenured space would work better? How does that...
Probably a bigger nursery, so a smaller tenured space would be better in that case, or it might be the switch away from generational would be best entirely, and so it's a switch to a more standard mark sweep model, because the generational policies tend to work best if you get a high rate of object churn. So if a lot of objects, if you create a flurry of objects all at once, that helps, and then they live for a while and then they die, and in that case the cost of collecting them is free because it's a copy and collector. That kind of situation is going to work really well with generational. If you get objects that tend to live for a long time, that can be quite unfortunate in generational collection, because first of all, when they're still in the nursery area, you have to copy these objects back and forth, and that's just wasteful. And then when they get to the tenured area, then they're going to hang around and they're just going to clutter up your object map and make your collection slower.
So you'd want to move away from a generational model in that case?
Yeah, it would be a good candidate.
So the IBM would actually support moving away from a generational memory model to just a flat memory model, like what was existing in, you know, prior to 1.5 then?
Yeah, you'd have to restart the JVM. You couldn't do it on the fly.
Right, yeah. So in this case, all of the things that you would do before in terms of having the PK spaces and wilderness and... a large object space would apply.
Yeah.
Okay. So you really have to drop the old model. You've just augmented by saying, okay, we can use this different model on top of the older model.
Yeah, we've got the existing policies, and then we've got the new policy, which is the Gen 1. And then we've also got a real-time policy as well, and that doesn't ship with the standard JVM. It's a separate product called WebSphere Real-Time, and it's only on limited architectures, and it makes kernel support and that kind of thing. But that's also another option.
Mm. So what does the real time give you then, say, over the standard shipment then?
It gives you guaranteed short pauses and a guaranteed utilization as well. And so certainly traditionally some real-time strategies, what they've tried to do is they've gone for the shortest pauses possible, and they've thought, great, we've got short pauses, mission accomplished. But what they haven't really been aware of is that if you have a short pause and then you have another short pause and then you have another short pause and another short pause, you may end up with a cluster of short pauses that are so tightly clustered that it's as if you had a long pause, and your application, the response times are going to not, they're not going to meet the targets, and you know, if you're flying
a
plane,
you get a stutter.
You get
a stuttering effect then in that case, right?
And so what the IBM real time does, it doesn't necessarily, people sometimes think of real time real fast, and of course it's not. It's
predictability.
Yeah, it's predictability, and so it's a guaranteed utilization. So you take any time slice up to, say, a lower limit, and you say, well, okay, within this 100 milliseconds, I want to be sure that my application has 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. And it says, yeah, fine, guarantee that. And then you take it smaller if your real-time constraints are even more tight. So you say, okay, within this 50 milliseconds, I want 50% of the application time. And again, it will meet that target.
Mm, so if it's collecting, it'll just, after 50 milliseconds, it just stops collecting and your application runs again.
Yeah, the pause time won't necessarily be 50 seconds in that scenario. It might do, like, struggling to think of numbers, but say a 5 millisecond pause, and then give your application 5 milliseconds, and then 5 millisecond pause. And so the idea is that the pauses are extremely short, and within any particular time period, the utilization is guaranteed as well.
What type of customers do you find are using, like, real-time solutions?
A lot of the finance industry are quite keen on it. I'm not sure whether there's many deployments there yet. It's quite good for things where you get interface with hardware, and so something that maybe traditionally would have been C is now Java instead. So, you know, things like, I think a lot of it, I'm not sure how many real deployments there are yet. I think it's still at the testing it out stage, because it's quite new technology, and it tends to be the sort of environments in which you need real time tend to be quite high stakes environments, so you want to test it out pretty thoroughly for a while yet.
Right.
But we're looking at it for things like music synthesis as well, because if you're doing real-time, or if you're doing music synthesis, then it's so audible if you get a stutter.
Yeah.
And so with the real-time, we can show that you can actually get the synthesis going smoothly, which is quite nice.
Yeah, it's the stutters that really kill the user experience in this case.
Yeah.
Do you find any interest from the gaming community then? Because they sort of have these real hard rendering problems.
Yeah, I expect there is. I don't know of any personally, but I expect there is.
Yeah. Is there much of a performance hit for using real-time extensions to the virtual machine?
The performance is definitely not as good. I don't know. I don't know the actual figures, but there is a performance hit, which is why real-time is not for everybody. And you tend to have two kinds of real-time constraints as well. So for some applications, the consequences of a failure are so catastrophic that you've absolutely got to meet the targets. But for a lot of other applications, well, the consequences of a failure are pretty bad, but they're livable with. And so in those cases, we tend to have soft real-time. And a lot of people who want real-time are actually more interested in the soft real-time. And in those cases, you're pretty likely that you're going to make your targets, but you get a big throughput gain in order to be a bit more flexible about whether you meet the targets or not.
So it's an interesting alternative then for people who have, like, soft real-time targets then, that, because traditionally they would probably be stuck on the existing technology.
Yeah, so we've got this continuum. So at one end we've got WebSphere real-time, which is hard real-time, and then we're working on getting more things into that intervening space where it's a lot better than a normal concurrent opt-average pause policy, and it's a lot faster than hard real-time. And then you can take that continuum up a bit further, so then you get the Gen Con policy, which tends to have quite short pauses. And then at the far end of the continuum, you've got the op throughput policy, which has fairly long pauses sometimes, depending on the heap size, but really quite good throughput.
You know, garbage collection has been such a thorn in Java's side for such a long time. Do you think this is really a deserved...
Absolutely not, actually. It's
I mean, you hear horror stories now of, you know, people saying, oh, we suffer like 30-second or 3-minute pause times, like once a day.
Well, the problem with garbage collection is it's invisible until it causes a problem for you. So under the covers, it can be doing a lot of really great things and speeding your application up, but you never notice that.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you only notice it when it causes problems. I tend to cycle it, and I find it's a bit the same with wind. If there's a headwind, I think, oh, isn't this disastrous? I've got a headwind. And if there's a tailwind, I don't notice it. I just think, oh, I'm really fit today.
Yeah.
And I think it's a bit the same with garbage collection, because quite often you'll end up with you've got a policy and it's got long pauses, but your overall throughput's actually better than with a different policy, because in the time when the application's not paused, it's going really blindingly fast, and that is because of the intervention of the garbage collection and how it's laid out, the objects in the heap and that kind of thing. But you tend to, in that kind of situation, you're often not aware that it was the garbage collection that caused your application to go faster. You just thought, oh, I'm a really good coder, look how I coded this up.
Does your work extend into other environments beyond like the AS400 environments, or are these systems any different than, say, running on like the Linux-based systems that IBM would normally support?
Yeah, I mean, we tend to support all of those platforms. So we've got the Z series and the I series and the P series, and the fundamental algorithms tend to be the same for most of those, and then the diagnostics characteristics that you look for tend to be the same as well. So, you know, it's on, no matter what your platform is, it's still pretty bad if you've got a high garbage collection overhead, and, you know, it's pretty bad if you've got the long pause times, and, you know, it's pretty bad if your heap size is thrashing and that kind of thing. Some of the implementation details are different, but the principles are the same across all of them.
What do you recommend then for GC pause times before you would start taking aggressive action to... actually GC efficiency, I should say, before you start taking aggressive action at tuning a virtual machine?
It depends hugely on the policy, because some policies can tolerate a much greater overhead than others. And so sometimes, for example, if you use the Gen Con policy, you'll see that you're spending a lot of time paused, but in fact your application throughput's still pretty good. And again, on the other hand, if you're using a concurrent policy, if you see any overheads above anything like 5%, then you know something's wrong and you need to retune your system, because something's destroying your garbage collection and it's not behaving the way you want it. But beyond that, it depends so much on what your quality of service requirements are. And so if you've got a big heap, then what you're going to expect is infrequent long collections. And as long as that's what you're happy with, then it's fine.
Do you tend to recommend against large heaps then? And what's large in your estimation?
Again, it all depends what you can tolerate. And so if you've got some sort of batch processing system, then a long pause time really isn't going to be a problem.
Right.
And if you collect too frequently, then what will happen is that every time you resume after a garbage collection, the application's going to go more slowly because the cache has been polluted. And so you need to, no matter what your quality of service requirement is, you kind of want to avoid collecting too frequently. And then if you've got a very large heap, you tend to find that the performance of your application is improved, but there's diminishing returns. So about 50% occupancy is probably ideal to aim for. So that means after you've done your collection, half of what was there at the beginning of the collection is still alive. But there's a lot of flexibility in that. You can go up to about 70-80% without seeing too severe a degradation. So if you've got a lot of data, then you obviously have to have a large heap in order to accommodate all your live data. I think we should actually...
go to your talk now. So, well, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you.